But time is not on our side. We must be upfront and say most of the whips of the NCOP are in Parliament, in committees. We're not likely to get them out because they're dealing with legislation. We have received some, now Eric has taken the list, we have received some apologies which we want to put in front of you. The first one is Deputy Chair NCOP Dau, Ndadi Nyambi, Honorable Mwita, Ntebe, Mukwili, Ndaba, and Honorable Singh. Now, we clearly are not correcting. And we've been discussing with the Speaker whether, in fact, we can start and whether there is any decision we are going to take today. Because we've got two items on the agenda. It is the minutes which must be adopted, and we want to submit that. We might not actually adopt the minutes. We might note them. We don't correct if we want to proceed. And then there is a presentation and a discussion on the Parliament's public participation model. So we're saying we can start the meeting, have those discussion note, if it is in order with the honourable members. Is it in order? I see he's nodding. Well, in that case, good morning, honourable members. Morning, Speaker and Deputy Speaker. We are formally then opening this meeting. I notice that the Chief Whip, Majority Party, Chief Whip, Opposition are here. Chief Whip and COP are here, and therefore we may start. In terms of our agenda, do we want to put anything else on the agenda, or can we just proceed on the basis of those two items? And Ntate Mdagane?
On our chair, at 11, I've got a meeting of the portfolio committee. May I be as choose?
Yes. Do we keep the agenda as it is? Just the two items. Thank you very much. I then wish to put item 3. Item 3 is the minutes of the 24th of October. May I take the minutes as read?
Yes.
Can I take you page by page? One. It's just the names for people who were there. Page 2. Anything? 3. Four. Page 5 and page 6. Since we're not correcting, can we just note the minutes? Thank you very much. I suggest since we are noting, we jump that item number 4, the matters arising, and go straight to the presentation. Are you ready, presenters?
Ms. Beck, present.
Ms. Beck, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to deal with all the slides seriatim. Slides have been made available since February. So I'm going to kick off with slides 2, 3, and 4. Deals mainly with salient concepts which emanate from the high-level panel report dealing with democracy, human rights, inclusivity, and then specifically around active citizenship. And then on slide 5, we deal with the social cohesion and nation-building elements of the report. Slide 6, I see it's not on the screen, so I hope members have got the slide in front of them. Slide 6, if we can get there, is a snapshot of Parliament's public participation model, identifying the four pillars of informing citizens, consulting citizens, and involvement in our parliamentary processes, and the fifth pillar being that of providing feedback. Slide 7 gives us the best fit approach for the public participation model, which has been captured in a model that's been provisionally adopted by this Joint Rules Committee. I want to focus on slide 9, where we have identified certain challenges around the first pillars of informing and educating the public around Parliament and the role of Parliament. And I think in the last 4 bullet points, it captures what our key concerns has been highlighted. Firstly, that there's a lack of informed participation in our processes. There's limited access to quality education around Parliament and how to get involved in parliamentary processes. And then the lack of access to information to ensure that there's good quality and adequate participation in our processes. And then lastly, the lack of education and empowerment of citizens to meaningfully participate in Parliament's activities. On slide 10, we focus on challenges that's been identified by the High Level Panel around the second pillar, that of consulting. And the focus here is that a participation that we engage in is often confined to consultations with citizens and then does not make provision for actual participation. We are very good at meeting with special interest groups around key pieces of legislation, but the broader consultation then does not happen. And this has been highlighted in a number of constitutional court judgments about the need for us to actually look at the way we participate and to ensure that there's effective and meaningful participation, particularly in our lawmaking process. On the last bullet point, the high-level panel specifically raised the concern about failures to sufficiently engage those affected through inclusive public hearings, as evidenced by key judgments such as Doctors for Life and the recent judgments that we've had. Slide 11 focuses on the next year, the challenges around involving the public in our processes. And here the key concern is that there's limited public participation. We've noted here, and this emanates from the High Level Panel report, that public participation is not compulsory in local government processes. In the vein that there's a provision in the Constitution that deals with public participation in the National Assembly, the National Council of Provinces, and in provincial legislatures, the Constitution is actually silent in having a similar provision applicable to local government processes. And this is an area that we think that this committee would want to look at. Key challenges around involvement is the fact that there's not sufficient time allocated for participation. It's often short due to voluminous and complex documents that are presented to members of the public. We need to deal with issues around the literacy levels of the audiences that we seek to participate in our processes. And then also areas that has been highlighted is that of customary consultation and negotiation processes in traditional committees, traditional communities. The high-level panel has highlighted the role of ward committees and particularly their role to enhance participation in local governance matters. Communities sometimes perceive that ward committees are owned by the ward councillors. Functioning of ward committees is affected by lack of capacity of elected members, and that communication links between councillors, ward committee, and the communities are insufficient. That there is a need for a greater public understanding of the role of ward councillors and their responsibilities. Slide 12, the next year to involve, we've reflected here on a World Bank study, and this is in the high-level panel report. Looking at the main reasons for the failure to implement public participation approaches. And the key thing here is the need to ensure that government develops ambitious delivery targets to overcome backlog in services. But many sectors stressed communities and user participation initially. Time-consuming and hard to scale, and this impact on implementation of key deliverables. The time frame for public participation, the panel has highlighted the fact that this is too short due to voluminous and complex documents that need to be perused, and that we need to make it easier for citizens to engage with the legalese and documentation that's often presented before committees and that we distribute during public hearings. I don't want to go into detail around the Lamosa judgment, but this has highlighted another judgment that has highlighted inadequate public participation. Just on a side, in response to this judgment, the administration has prepared a practice note, which we have shared with the chairpersons of committees, to ensure that we do not fall foul of this area of the Constitution again. And I think the area that we've identified at slide 13 probably maybe as our weakest link is to close the feedback loop. We have very in instances we've had very good public participation processes, but then it ends between the committees and the houses, and then we don't go back to actually provide feedback to citizens what the impact of their participation has been. So a key concern here is that communities are not getting adequate feedback on the outcomes of legislation and particularly their participation in the legislative process. Our recommendations, slide 14, is that we need to look at improving our education around how to participate in Parliament, how to participate in our lawmaking processes, and how to access information, but also access Parliament in order to meaningfully participate in our processes. So informed participation is critical for citizens to hold government accountable and to participate effectively. So empowering citizens with information and information that they are able to understand is going to be a critical component to make the public participation model a success. The last bullet point, I think they captured it succinctly to say that participation can be meaningful only if adequate, relevant, and timely information is provided. The next slide, 15, key focus here is that we should facilitate meaningful and effective public participation in the legislative and policy-making process, and to do that through information that's made available, but also our own education programs that we run on a regular basis to prepare citizens to participate in our lawmaking and oversight processes. So the bullet point two, Parliament should consider opening up debate on the desirability and feasibility of a system that incorporates public participation and parliamentary oversight for certain categories of appointments to public office to increase independence. I think to a large degree we have addressed that in terms of the processes that we are following with particularly appointments to Chapter 9 institutions. There is a recommendation that the legislative process should be overhauled and that the accountability of Parliament to the public should be strengthened by more direct linkages between members of Parliament and their constituencies. And again, the highlight here is the feedback loop from communities to legislation depends in part on the electoral system that's in place. And the panel therefore recommends that Parliament amend the Electoral Act provide for an electoral system that makes members of Parliament accountable to define constituencies in a proportional representation and constituent system for national elections. Next slide, 16. Around consultation, the high-level panel has highlighted the need for extensive public participation processes. And that Parliament should, at bullet point three, consider identifying and reviewing legislation that includes a public participation component, including those that relate to Parliament's interaction with citizens, and ensure that it conducts oversight of, ensures adequate resources for the implementation of these provisions. We've made a proposal in relation to committee oversight over the implementation of legislation, that each committee should in fact have a legislative framework per portfolio and in the planning process for each committee, overseeing the implementation of selected pieces of legislation should become part and parcel of the committee program, and that there should be regular reporting around that. Slide 17 deals with timeframes for public participation process to be extended, and Parliament should consider having a regular annual mandated and dedicated intersectoral public hearings with departments and stakeholders to obtain feedback from departments as well as input from the public on progress with the implementation of legislation. And as I've indicated earlier, we've suggested that this become part and parcel of committee programs going forward, that there should be regular engagement in terms of monitoring implementation of legislation that's been passed by Parliament. Slide 18, around feedback, we have highlighted the need there, or the high-level panel has highlighted the need to establish sustainable partnerships with stakeholders and to obtain feedback from both departments and from the public on progress with the implementation of legislation. In terms of our way forward, this committee has adopted the public participation model subject to the incorporation of recommendations which may emanate from the high-level panel. There is a project team that has reviewed the model and has also looked at the implications of the, this report, and they have commenced with amendments, obviously subject to further discussions that may emanate from this meeting. And our proposal is, once those amendments have been incorporated, that an implementation plan be developed for the revised model, and that we will then, from a parliamentary administration perspective, have to look at capacity development and structural arrangements to make sure that it is effectively implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Honourable members, the floor is open. Any addition? Deputy Speaker, Mab Rota.
Thank you very much.
May it is.
Chairperson, and let's appreciate the work done by the team that just presented on extracting these perspectives from the high-level panel report. But I do also wish to suggest that perhaps this should constitute an opportunity for us to also look at the gaps that may have existed even in our own public participation model. We are also learning from elsewhere. For example, when I listen to what has been said about public participation, I don't hear the part of public participation that is, that, for example, begins with a definition of public participation that says that includes people running their own issues. As an example, the Cape Town Partnership is an interesting partnership model that is designed and run by people, but with support of a municipality and other parts of government and so on. And similarly, in Durban, the Johnny Makatini Multimedia Center is a partnership that people wanted to run and so on. But there are legislative and policy obstacles to doing that. So there are weak and strong forms of public participation. Now, in getting to that, we should incorporate some of the insights that comes from that consideration in our public participation model. It's about us and getting the public involved in our work, but also at other levels. For example, it also means that people creating opportunities for the public to be involved in carrying out what may sometimes have often been thought of as only government work, but people are doing it themselves and so on. So the model must learn from that. I want to recommend strongly that the team must look at the work done by in something called bringing citizens to the table. And it's a very articulate assessment of the work done. This is in the US, but the work done to involve people effectively in the work they do. We have already learned that there are often complex issues into which people can't get involved effectively because they don't have knowledge. The report acknowledges that, but doesn't say what must be done about it effectively. And so there are a few insights that I recommend that be looked at and incorporated into the work that is described as the way forward. Looking at the models of citizen engagement and participation for example, the infrastructure for doing that, places where people can get engaged. Interpretation, there isn't any reference to interpretation that I see here. But I assume that it is taken for granted, perhaps because it gets done somewhere. But emphasizing it as a necessary language is often an obstacle to effective public participation. So to the extent that we problematize this area appropriately, be the function of that way forward to go and search for those. We can provide some of the resources that people can look at, the team can look at. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Mebrod?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm on page 15. I'm looking at the recommendation by the HLP under the third and the fourth bullet. My understanding of what is being said here is that there should be a change in the Electoral Act. And the main reason for that is that the system that we are using now, it's not reaching our constituencies. And I just want to argue that, to me, that it's a bit problematic, because in my opinion, we have got PCOs in our constituencies, and whenever we have legislation that has got to be processed, we have got ways of processing the legislation through public hearings, and not only public hearings, but also even the NCOP that is directly linked to the provinces does that. So, changing of the electoral system to me means we have to start with the constitutional amendment, which I think has not really been tested. Maybe the systems that we are using, they may say we have got gaps, but just to suggest that we should change the electoral system, to me, it doesn't augur well. So I think they still need a chairperson for testing whether this is really not working, and be given to us and see how we can improve on it rather than changing the whole electoral system. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. The Honourable Titiza.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've been covered by Honourable Broad, of course. That's exactly the point I also wanted to raise, that I'm not sure whether we've checked other jurisdictions which have got a proportional representation system and a duality which we have in terms of the NCOP. Remember the evolution from the Senate to the NCOP brought in new dynamics, but also how in terms of the application we've actually looked at how best your public representatives, you know, coming from the NCOP in particular, have been adequately resourced to be able to carry that dynamic link between the citizens and public representatives. At the same time, the way in which our own program has been designed, is it facilitating for that kind of work? So that's one area which I also think maybe before we rush to the amendment of an electoral system, we need to look in other jurisdictions like ourselves, how have they managed, you know, to ensure that there is that dynamic connect with the citizens. But I was also going to say one of the concerns I have is that some of the recommendations from the high-level panel relate to the local government sphere. And I'm not sure whether there was enough detail to assess as to how the Municipal Structures Act and its mechanisms, particularly for your ward committee systems as well as, you know, integrated development system where citizens participate, has it evolved to what we require at the moment? So there's a way in which, in my view, I may be wrong, there is more of a conflating of the different spheres and what each must do. So part of that review of our public participation model at national level, while taking from what the HLP is saying we need to make sure that we don't end up wanting to assume the responsibilities that are already by law allocated to a particular sphere. I'm not sure how we'll do that, but I think it's important to reflect on it. Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable Mthembu.
Honourable Didiza covers me in dealing with the local sphere of government. And how does public participation get exercised at that level? And I agree that when you try to clap all these spheres together and not say how is this area of work undertaken in the local sphere of government, provincial sphere and national sphere, you might miss the boat. It's all public participation, but how is that effectively undertaken? It would be quite helpful to just look back. The HLP would have done itself quite a big favor. Have they also looked at the systems, indeed at local government level, you have already two ways of coming up with public reps. One is PR, proportional, and the other one is indeed constituency. Having this system at local level, which they are proposing that we must have at provincial and national level, what has been the goodness of this system at local level as it relates to public participation? Because if they were to make a case that, you know what, because we have this constituency-based system at local level, this has assisted us by improving on public participation in this manner. Now, a case is not being made. In fact, the HLT also critiques the public participation at local level, notwithstanding the fact that the solution that they are proposing is in fact in existence at local level. So I would say that all of us, as we do the review, we must also say what is in fact the public participation mechanism at local level. Taking into account the constituency-based election of ward councillors, equally the PR. But what is the system that is in place? Which indeed, the HLP will be correct. Does that system at local level, now I'll come to what I know at national level. Before you even go, our system says we even go there to our people to talk about the matter, which in the main also introduces the subject matter that the public reps will be coming there to consult them on. We go there in some form of education on the matter that is before the House, the National Assembly. Similarly, I know that even the NCOP, in their public participation model, whether taking Parliament to the people, etc., etc., there is also this post-report to the communities that we would have gone to, communities that would have raised whatever issues with us as the NCOP. We have an opportunity after we have done so to go back, including those that the committee might have raised issues on, whether it be the ministers or provincial governments. We go back to the communities and say, on these matters that we have raised in our public participation model that is called taking Parliament to the people, these are the answers. So there is feedback. Now, to say that there is no feedback in the entirety of the system is not that accurate. If we have not looked at what system is there. What is this system? Is this system responding to what has been raised, or indeed are there gaps in the system? My own view is that as we do the review, doing the review must not be done in an abstract fashion. It must be done considering also what the Deputy Speaker has said. What are the communities doing on their own in this area? Again, not galvanized by government, not galvanized by parliament, on their own civil society. What mechanisms have they crafted to ensure that people through civil society get engaged in matters that affect them? So I'm saying in this review, we must be holistic. We must also get what systems and frameworks are in place at provincial and national level, and not conflate national, provincial, and local level in terms of systems and frameworks that are available, and critique those frameworks. In fact, it's our duty. Where the HLP is correct is that we must critique the systems and frameworks that we have and take into account what the HLP were confronted with as they interacted with our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The Honourable Steenhuisen?
Yeah, thanks very much. It's been a long 3 months, but I'm glad we finally got to discuss the report. Look, I don't think there's very much, as I've said on the last engagement we had on this high-level panel report, that this Fifth Parliament and the embers of its existence is going to be able to do with this. And I would imagine that this document, together with the legacy documents that we're preparing, will have to be something which the Sixth Parliament engages with. Nonetheless, I mean, there have been studies that have been done in the past around this particular matter. I mean, most notably, the Slovet Commission looked at a mixed constituency PR top-up system, and there were some recommendations made there, and I'm not sure what's happened to that report, but you know, there's no use reinventing the wheel. There was a report. We maybe need to have a look at that, see how much of that is still relevant, and whether there's scope for an updating of that particular thing. But I do think that there is a desperate need in South Africa to reinforce the causal link between members of parliament and the communities that elect them. I think that one of the complaints is from both provincial and national government that people feel disconnected from who their representatives are, and that's why often, no matter what sphere of government it affects, whether it's a local clinic that's not working, it's the local high school, whether it's a dysfunction, whether it's pension payout points, it's often the ward councillor who becomes the shortest distance between two points, and that's because people understand that causal link between somebody who they voted for, put into place, and their responsibility to represent. So then we've got to try and find a way to bring people closer to the parliamentary process, and people closer to holding members of parliament accountable, and breaking the stranglehold that political parties have on members of parliament, and making them genuinely answerable to constituencies, and giving people the power to pass judgment on performance, etc. I think that would lead to healthier representative democracy. How we do it, what models we look at, I think is something which the Sixth Parliament is going to grapple with, and probably very difficult to finalise even within the life of that parliament, because it will be a fundamental change. The second thing I just want to make is that I don't think we make nearly enough use of Chapter 9 institutions supporting democracy, and incorporating their work with the work of Parliament and our committees. And I think that there's almost a silo approach to the work that those institutions and Chapter 9 institutions are doing, and the work that we do as Parliament. And I think that there's potential to create far more synergy between, you know, on the ground work that you know, the Gender Commission, the Human Rights Commission, all those commissions are doing, and the work that we can do. So I think we should see them as playing in the future a far more supplementary role to our work as elected legislature. And so I think whatever model we do, I think that we need to try and pull those Chapter 9 institutions far closer to our processes and our decision-making matrices here in the legislature.
Thank you very much. The Honourable Lavoska.
Give myself a... Thank you, Chairperson. I want to... Not my day. I've been better before. I want to go to page, where is it, right in the beginning, where it says that communities on page 13, and communities are not getting adequate feedback on the outcome of legislation, and then a few other things that have been already mentioned by other honourable members, and should reviewing time frames and what we're doing. And then I want to go to things that have been said about public participation on local government level. I think in the same time that we're talking about public participation, we're also talking about our oversight model. And I think we need to start looking at legislation in the process of doing new legislation and then reviewing existing legislation, because that's two separate processes. Reviewing, making new legislation, that's a public participation process for that, and that needs more time, that needs a specifically in the NCLP, but also reviewing existing legislation, because each department with what we have is a framework of legislation. Now, at this stage, and the Honourable Chair of the NCOP knows that, I think the NCOP has an explicit role to play to ensure that the impact of legislation should be measured, oversight, whatever. What we do on taking Parliament to the people is we work in themes. We work not with legislation. When we're going on provincial weeks, we work with themes. We don't do anything on legislation. So there's a gap between what we say is an oversight and a public participation model, and I think in Parliament we should sort that out, specifically in the NCOP, because this is where these gaps, and there's over-concentration of certain things on other things. Because in our daily program in the NCOP, we're doing more or less the same things that the INA is doing. Although the Constitution says that we are the house where provinces are represented, specifically we have the responsibility to see that provinces are represented in legislation. Now that representation means in making laws as well as overviewing laws and see what is the impact of that law on that level. On that level, I want to go down to local government. Local government only do bylaws as a meaning of their own mechanisms. The rest of the laws have an impact on local government. And I think the same thing of thinking about oversight and public participation, where does it fit in? SAGA is represented in the NCOP. SAGA is an organization that if they do their job right, they should be the main stream of functioning of looking at the impact of legislation on local government. I haven't heard any SAGA speech in the NCOP ever refer to any legislation. Sorry. I haven't seen a report of SAGA ever looking at any legislation and the impact thereof on local government, on the money, on whatever. And when we're doing public participation or doing overview of legislation, I think ward committees, make-up committees, whoever that organizations on local government level should be the people, should be the role players that are being contacted when the NCOP or even in the NA phase going down and get public participation and consulting. That's just my few hits. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. The Honourable Mashanele.
No, thanks. Well, my view is that I'm not sure the extent to which the panelists review public participation, the extent to which it has taken Parliament in its totality, that includes the NCOP and its involvement with
Honourable Mahlalela, Parliament does include the NCOP.
Yes, I'm saying, that's what I'm saying.
No, you make it as though there is Parliament and the NCOP.
I'm saying,
yeah.
I'm not sure the extent to which the panel has taken Parliament into its totality, which includes the NCOP. That's what I'm saying. I'm raising this in the context that of the role the NCOP is playing in relation to when legislations get referred to the NCOP. The NCOP goes to provinces and this serious involvement of participations of communities in legislative processes before the legislations are passed by the NCOP, and therefore the totality of Parliament having involved the communities in that context. That's what I'm raising. I'm not sure the extent to which the panel has taken that into consideration, that its Parliament includes the NCOP and its involvement with legislatures. That's the issue that I'm raising, Chair. Looking at the way they are presenting the extent to which there is community involvement in legislative processes, because in their view is that a Parliament is not actively engaging the public in legislation. And I'm saying there are a lot of activities that are taking place, in particular by the NCOP, in engaging communities through provincial legislatures once bills are before itself. But that's one issue that I'm raising. And then the second issue around feedback on legislation passed by Parliament. I'm tempted to agree with them, because I don't remember Parliament having a feedback mechanism on legislations passed by itself, on the impact it has on the communities, on how this legislation that we've passed ourselves are being implemented by government. Because even ourselves, we don't have a system here in Parliament to actively get feedbacks from the executive of how they are implementing legislation that we've passed. That includes even ordinary reports. We go oversight and conduct oversight reports, and then we come back, we table in Parliament. That's the end of the story. We have never had, at any particular given point in time, have a feedback mechanism system that once a report has been presented to Parliament, Parliament is resolved on the matter, becomes a resolution of the House, and therefore there is an expectation from department concerned to give a feedback at a particular given point in time on the progress or implementation thereof of the resolution that the House has passed. I've never seen that happening. And therefore, that's a gap that we need to see. How best do we deal with that? So that it doesn't just become a compliance matter, that we present report, we pass those reports, and that's the end of the story. What happened to those reports is neither here nor there. And that's the fundamental problem that we must deal with this. So the feedback mechanism should not just be limited to legislation and policies, but it should be the totality of everything that we pass as a resolution in the House, and create a feedback mechanism from department so that we're able to track that resolutions that we have passed are implemented, and we are able therefore to determine the impact and the outcomes of those resolutions that the House passes at the end of the day.
But at the end of each year or each term, we're unable to account to say, you know, we've passed so many legislation. These are the impact this legislation has had to our communities. We've passed so many resolutions based on the oversight visits that committees have indicated. These are the impact. This is what are the changes that has occurred as a result of these oversight visits that committees have engaged upon. We don't have that system in place. And that's what we need to come up with a mechanism and say, how best do we close that system? Thanks.
I beg to differ, but I will respond at the end. If you look into your rules, you actually do have that system. The powers of committees enable committees to deal with any matter under the sun. You determine your own agenda. In other words, you are not precluded. In fact, in the group year 1994, you will remember when we started making laws that we had, at least in the defense committees, we had an understanding that any law we passed, we would have the powers to review within 12 months. So that parliament has not chosen to exercise that. We cannot say that does not exist. I think we must just say that there are things that we have concentrated on to the detriment of others. But we do have the powers to do those things. The Honourable Waters.
Not to repeat what people have said, but to do with the electoral system, I think, you know, there is a disjuncture, a disconnect between us and the voters, particularly Parliament and province. And bringing in constituencies would make MPs more accountable to the voters. Now, Honourable Barotto raised an issue about amending the constitution because our current system, well, the constitution dictates that we have to have general proportionality. By having a mixed system, as what's been suggested here, so actually similar to Germany has a mixed system, and obviously a few other countries around the world, you would, by having both constituencies and proportionality, you'd be able to ensure general proportionality of the results as well. So it's not an exclusion, and I personally don't see a need to change the constitution, but that's something we obviously have to look at. And as members have stated with regards to the local government electoral system, there is a hybrid system already, wards and PR, and we all know that ward councillors are the to-go person when anything happens. I mean, they are swamped with issues from constituencies because the voters know who they've voted for as an individual. So they know they voted for Joe Soap as the ward councillor. But when it comes to Parliament and province, they voted for a party, and they actually don't know who their representative is within that party, generally speaking. And there are some exceptions, of course, but generally speaking, they have no idea who that MP is or MPL is. And I think we do need to look at a system that makes us more accountable as parliamentarians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Matthias?
Thank you, look, our critique of the presentation here would be a bit different in that it focuses on the conceptual weaknesses of the current system. Well, Honorable Tenodi, as he makes his contribution, do I agree with what he says? The only part which I disagree with him is for him to go straight to the heart of world imperialism and say, let's draw models and system from the United States of America. If you go straight to the heart of world imperialism, where will the DA go to? I'm saying, if Honorable Tenodi goes straight to the heart of world imperialism to borrow best models and system from, where will the DA go to? Now, there are three inherent conceptual weaknesses with Parliament, and these weaknesses Parliament must overcome.
One is its over-reliance on its own internal models, which have been randomly mentioned here, as if these are the be-all of what can be used as best models. And these models are often bureaucratic and obsolete, including relying on apartheid-era legislation, ordinances, and all of that in some of other levels of government, municipalities and provinces. So that is one of the conceptual inherent weaknesses of the parliament, of the system. Secondly, is the post-independence, or in our case, as South African, because by the end of 1994 and by the end of the struggle for liberation in 1994, what was attained was not really independent. So we can't talk of post-independence as it was with other African states, but post-democratic dispensation. It's a paranoia that goes with the post-democratic dispensation, where the government or the ruling elite often display such paranoia against civil society organizations, which often are treated as agents of foreign powers. Of course, yes, there may, of course, be some measure of the basis for such suspicion. But that paranoia ought to be overcome, because if civil society organization is not encouraged, is not inspired to play its role because of the paranoia of the elite, of the ruling elite, it weakens the whole concept of public participation. Thirdly, is what the post-democratic state and government generally has created and continue to cultivate, a pliant citizenry which accords government divine powers to govern by itself, for itself, around the concept of democracy without seeking to be held accountable. Applying citizenry, it's a problem it ought to be tempered with. We need an active citizenry which hold government accountable. The effective public participation model is the one which enlists grassroots formations, people's own organization, through people's own experiences that they themselves have tested and work for them, and they can depend on them. There's a need that we must revitalize the concept of the organs of people, so the rudimentary, and this was I was taught by Honorable Senudi, rudimentary organs of people's power. We need to revitalize them. And currently these rudimentary organs of people's power have been crowded out, have been extruded, have been marginalized. They are only activated during certain periods, certain times, and most of them depends on government patronage. We need to overcome the patronage that is linked with these organs of people's power. This is a concept which was conceptualized at the end of the last century, the beginning of the current one, in a paper called Ready to Govern. We need to go back to that. And it's only if we do that we'll be able to ensure that public participation is given its true meaning, through which people will be empowered to govern, to set their own terms, and they govern to the fullest of their ability, than to depend on some quasi-system or some systems which really don't work and do not understand their own experience. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir. The Honourable the Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I think we have had a good discussion, and I would suggest that we should pick up some issues that would find their way into the training for the 6th Parliament, coming out of both the work that was done by the high-level panel the observations we are making as actual practitioners, and of course other discussions that are not taking place in this particular committee, but which are about the recommendations and the observations of the high-level panel. My attention is drawn yet again on page 12, on slide 12, at the second last bullet. There's a specific point being made that the 30-day time frame for public participation is too short due to voluminous and complex documents that need to be perused. Now, my mind is already going to a setting in a rural village somewhere where there's a voluminous and complex document. And I'm just wondering, what would you be doing with a voluminous document with a community of that sort? Because those are people whose specific preoccupations are about issues of daily life, are about the needs of people, whether it's for water, when we've been doing door-to-door, you find communities where it's so hot, yet there's no water coming through the taps. And those are the issues, not voluminous documents. Even if you are going to discuss a piece of legislation, it doesn't seem to me you want to bring a document to the people. You want to get the principle of what their needs are and what their experience has been, maybe of what has been brought to them by way of delivery by government previously. Not necessarily to take them through a technical process of a voluminous document. So I was hoping, Madam Chairperson, that part of what we would do is reflect on, if you say a 30-day time frame for public participation is too short, is there a recommendation? Because, you know, by the time you come next year to the sixth parliament, we actually ought to have taken the discussion a bit more forward. So I just thought that in addition to all the issues that have been raised, we should also be thinking forward, that we would be sharing our insights and make actual recommendations for future MPs. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. The Honourable Muhai.
Thanks, Chair. I've been covered by the speakers who came before me that we need a holistic review so that we give really ourselves an opportunity that this report directs us that we need to discuss some of the issues, progress that we have made and challenges that that remains. For me, Chair, given the amount of work that was done in the past 24 years, the unparalleled progressive legislation that has been passed by this parliament, we really need to, when we do our legacy reports, give proper diagnosis of the current status quo so that it helps us to reflect some of the best practices that must be retained, some of the issues that in the sixth parliament we can do without, because it really help us to look in our conduct as parliament on how we dealing with the issue of legislation, public participation, legislation oversight, public participation rules. So I think it's my view, obviously, because there are certain issues that we need to deal with. First, even areas of strategic convergence between the two houses, NA, NCOP, look into areas of emphasis in articulating the mandates of these two houses, and also whether the existing institutional mechanism is appropriate to factor in provincial, local spheres into national policy architecture, whether those systems are adequate. So I don't want to be tempted to discuss those issues, but I think we need to make these reflections because we are likely to, in an unstructured way, go around in circles. Thanks.
The Honorable Mtembu.
Chair, I think I'm covered by Honorable Mohai, and to a certain extent, other colleagues, including the speaker. One thing that we must disabuse ourselves of, well, before I say so, let's go and look at other jurisdictions that have got constituency-based electoral system and see whether such constituency-based electoral system have improved public participation, because that is the issue, so that we are scientific. Whether there's been, in fact, taken from the report of the commission itself, the high-level panel, they make reference to our own local government that has an element of constituency-based electoral system. And they also critique that, you know what, there hasn't been any meaningful public participation, notwithstanding the fact that you do have elements of, therefore, Honorable Waters, it does not follow that when you have a constituency-based system at whatever level, that will improve public participation. That there is no scientific evidence before us now, as we speak. But of course, we agree with you that as a country, we must go and look at what the Van Zylstra-led Commission said. And also other studies that have been conducted on our electoral system. To what extent would such studies and also commission's reports impact on the public participation? But again, the point that has been made, you see, we must critique without, and that's what the report is saying.
Honorable
Matthias, no, is my friend. We must indeed critique what we have. And that's what the high-level panel says as a recommendation. Let's critique with an aim of reviewing what we have. And the point that colleagues are making, including Honorable Bohai and Mashai, is that, well, I'm not sure whether even the high-level panel did meet with us. I'm not very much sure. That is the other omission on their part. Just meeting with us as parliamentarians and saying, Hematod, can you tell us what is your public participation model? Because you can only make a meaningful criticism of the model if indeed you have been given and we have asked questions to those people that are tasked with that area of work. I don't remember, as the chief whip, I was not called by the high-level panel on the public participation model. And I don't know whether, Honourable Speaker, you were called. Honourable Thandi Modiso, you were called. I'm not sure. So, but I think they've started the work. Parliament on its own can also make a serious critique on our own public participation model so that we indeed improve. I agree with Honourable Mashale Labat, also with Honourable Modiso. We have not done our work as parliamentarians. If we agree on whatever resolution, it's the work of committees to follow through, to track whether the resolutions that we have passed as a House have been implemented by whatever department that we are oversighting or overseeing. If we have not done so, we must not say that there is no mechanism, because the portfolio committee mechanism allow us to follow through, allow us to invite departments, even ask them, here is a legislation that we have passed. To what extent has this legislation improved or impacted on the lives of our people? If we have not done so, it's not because we don't have the powers to do so. It's because we opted not to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Dias, you are the last.
Thank you.
Mr. Waters.
I was prompted by Honorable Steenhuisen's reference correctly to the institutions that support democracy. I remember a meeting, a public meeting, in which people were saying to us, do you follow the money that you give to municipalities or departments to ensure that it does what they are meant to do and so on? And of course, the overall problem is the question that the public was asking had been asked by the Auditor General to us here. And so the Public Audit Amendment Act, I want to claim that it's partly attributable to the public outcry for us to effectively monitor. Because not only to monitor, but knowing that this happens, to take action. So the teeth that we are giving to the Auditor General is directly related to what Honorable Steenhuisen called our incorporating into the work we do what the work of the institutions that support democracy does. So the Auditor General is an example in this instance of the amendment of that legislation being that. So in a sense, I agree that we should do, perhaps we should suffer a lot of these issues, including the gender questions and our recent, with apologies to the chief whips, all of them present here, to the men's parliament that we had here. As I said, with apology to you, I will give you a report, honorable members, we will provide. But the point I'm making about it is that it's the continuation of the agenda for promoting gender. And so it must be addressed from particular angles and so on. So as a result of things that come up from the work that's done by the institutions that support democracy. Finally, Chairperson, I hope as a process point, this report we are meant to go and look at and perhaps come back to it at a later stage. The Speaker suggests that incorporating perhaps with observations into the legacy report. If it means that we are not going to come back to it, let it be with the understanding that perhaps members can submit any observations that perhaps can help to look at and take advantage of the process to incorporate ideas that are emerging. A huge population that we lead out in cyberspace. The high-level panel, I don't know whether it has sufficiently critiqued the population that lives now in cyberspace and our methods and their adequacy for dealing with it and their weaknesses. So in a sense, this is an area around which we need some useful interventions. Thank you.
Honorable Waters.
Chair, thanks, and I'll keep it short. My input wasn't restricted just to public participation. It was how do we make MPs more accountable to the voters, and how do we have a link between the voters and the MPs here in Parliament? And that's why I was talking about the constituency, a mixed system. I mean, the Speaker raised issues about going door-to-door where people don't have water. I mean, that's a real issue that affects people on a daily basis. I mean, how many MPs bring those issues to Parliament currently? I mean, we could look at the questions that MPs and ask and see how many actually bring constituency issues to Parliament. How many actually submit petitions on local issues that affect voters directly? Not many, and that's a disjuncture between us and the voters, and we need to make sure that we build that and strengthen it. That's all I wanted to say.
Very much. I just wanted to say that at the beginning of the meeting, we agreed that we were not correcting. We also agreed that we would discuss and not take any decision which would have later comebacks legally. I don't know, Speaker, if you want to have the last word, especially on the process forward on this report. Because in my book, for instance, some of the questions which Ndati Mahlalela raises, once resolutions are taken in the House, they become property of the House. So
both the Speaker and I are at liberty to follow through and say, you committed, you said this, why is it not happening? My frustration, which is what, Speaker, I spoke to the President about very openly last week, was that some of us do follow, write numerous letters to the executive and say, this is what you committed to, it has not happened. And we raised that publicly to say, but we don't get responses from the executive, because it is our duty to say, we're not getting any joy, but we are doing our work. So sometimes when you don't get that response, you do not have anything that filters back into the House. But that does not say that the committees should not be following up on that. And I wanted to suggest, Speaker, even before that maybe we do need, perhaps as a parting gift to the members who might not be coming, or to the members who might be coming back, that in fact we need to retrain chairpersons of committees. Because if they are not properly trained, they think they do not have, committees don't have the powers. Committees have more powers than the House sitting, because that's where you get to really get into digging and following up and visiting site and whatever and whatever. So that we do not limit our powers, that we need to do these things. But also lastly, I do remember that Parliament does have a public participation model, and I'm hoping that we are going to say we need to do a comparison between the two models. Because my understanding was that the high-level panel was going to focus on the legislation that we had passed. If you throw your mind back, we actually at some point approached the EU, at least in the Northwest, to say we needed funds to look at old legislation which needed to be taken off our books, which needed to be kept, and the impact thereof. So when the high-level panel came in, we thought, good, that job which we were unable to finish is now going to be taken over by them. Because when you look at the volumes of work that Parliament has, it becomes impossible for you as Parliament to actually have the extra time to look and review legislation. But it is part of our job. You can't make laws without reviewing what you have passed. You can't make amendments without actually exercising the power to say this amendment is necessary because Act 1 was supposed to produce this, and these are the reasons why we think we need to amend here because it has not met. That is a review. So I think that for me, it is simplifying the job of parliamentarians, but also enabling them not to think that it is always only the scholar out there and not us, the practitioners, who can say it works for us, it doesn't work for us, this is the impact in community X, and this is how we think it must be changed, even though we know we have the powers of recommendation and cannot execute. Speaker, you are the last word on this matter.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable members, can I remind us that when we got the report of the high-level panel, as this structure, we formed under the stewardship of the House Chairpersons a substructure to whom we handed the responsibility of considering the many recommendations of the report with the view to determine which of them had to be dealt with in whatever different ways. And in fact, the approach that was then brought back was to say there are some issues we can immediately refer and channel to portfolio committees and select committees of the houses, and that had to be done. There would be others that would be on a longer term basis looked at, and in fact ways be determined of taking issues forward, including through the sixth Parliament. And therefore, this discussion we've just had is partly that exercise of looking at what is it that was adopted previously, in which case we are continuously implementing those issues that we previously agreed on. But we need then to come back to see whether there's areas, like for instance, it was mentioned that in the issue of the Electoral Act or the electoral approach or system in the country, it's not a matter of just sitting here and deciding just like that. Should we ever come to a position where we believe something fundamental had to be done about the electoral system of South Africa, then that's a matter we would handle differently. And therefore, that would be looked at as part of enhancing Parliament's engagement with public, which would then be treated with the seriousness and the depth that it deserves. Proposed legislative amendments should be considered by the 6th Parliament. On the question of the progress report on the implementation of the model, which was given before Parliament, I think what we're saying is that we should see to what extent before the adjournment of the elections can we pick up some of the issues and make sure that they become part of the legacy report that is being led by the Deputy Speaker. And where applicable, the political task team chaired by the House Chairperson should be consulted by the administration. So we will see in this process what are the issues we can immediately pick up and incorporate to that which we believe without any more trouble and much to do, we will just incorporate into the model. That which still needs further consideration, and in fact we will then leave the rest for the legacy report and for the 6th Parliament. I don't think, honourable members, we should be idealistic about what we can possibly do before the elections. Because we all know that next year, apart from SONA and the budget, there's very, very little that here, physically, we are going to be able to do. However, there's nothing wrong with always dreaming and hoping and pushing as much as you can, because that's the only reason we are here, because we dreamt and we kept pushing and we're here today in a free South Africa. Chairperson, unless you tell me otherwise, I thank you for being so kind as to listen to me. Thank you.
Thank you much, very much, Speaker. I was born on Christmas, so I'm always dreaming of good things in December, man. So my dream is that you have a wonderful day and all your meetings continue to progress. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.
The Rules Committee is continuing, honorable members, of the NA, Rules Committee of the NA. Thank you.